I used to think, if you asked me like even a year ago, I'd be like, well, come on, they're going to roll this guy over in a, you know, in a gurney, get him over the finish line. And I was like, no one would believe that. The whole premise of, you know, their democracy, you know, yeah, like relies on people actually still buying it. And
right.
I don't know that, I don't know that they care anymore. Cause like when they talk about democracy, it's a soundbite, right? It's not democracy
it's
the way, it's not the republic they're
it's
preserving.
The opposite of what's happening. Once they, it's almost like you get kidnapped and the kidnapper has a mask on, but once he shows you his face, he's got to kill you.
Correct.
And they've shown their face.
Yeah. You know, again, they, I don't think there's anything they wouldn't do. I mean, you put out something, I think it was on Twitter yesterday, which was, you know, sort of that extreme. Like, well, if they can't get Trump this way, what's the next level? And I think they've proven that they'll do that in the past.
I think
we're now figuring that out. We understand it. I think the system's probably been broken for, you know, much longer than any of us would care to admit. And for me, I saw it firsthand.
Well, at least 61 years it's been broken since they killed
exactly.
the president in an election year.
Exactly. And, you know, for me, I still, even when we started this process, even I'd say it's safe to say I was probably the number two target of, you know, Russia. And I was like, well, there must be something to it. I know I didn't obviously collude with Russia, but maybe, you know, maybe I took a selfie with an agent once because I took 10,000 selfies
right.
a day, right? So, you know, there, but even, like, knowing that I was a target, I was like, I still believed.
I get it.
Because I wanted to, right? I wanted
no,
to believe
I get it.
America is the greatest place in the world, and you can do it. And I'm like, you know, it's the FBI. And, I, you know, again, there's some door kickers that I'm still like, hey, they're home team. I get it. They're doing eventually, those guys are going to have to speak up, though, right?
We're long past the time.
The door kickers a pass for far too long, which is like, hey, you know, they can't go against the leadership. But, like, when you're watching this kind of bastardization of justice, when you're watching this sort of lopsided level, when they're, you know, they spend more time, you know, kicking down the doors of an Amish farmer selling unpasteurized milk than actually going after people committing terror because, you know, they're trans or, you know, whatever it is that they are, you really lose that ability to get that pass that I really wanted them to give. But I wanted to believe that everything I grew up believing was accurate, and it's all bullshit. It's just all bullshit. So we have to fix that. That's why we fight now, to actually make it so.
But you saw this on January 6th, too. I mean, I know that Joe Scarborough and the rest of the liars presented those people as, like, insurrectionists and dangerous. They were actually the most pure-hearted and
100%.
The most naive about the. I mean, they were literally walking with pocket constitutions saying, no, you can't do this. They believed in the system much more than the people who put them in prison who don't believe in it at all.
Without question. And you saw that. I mean, you know, the narrative was pushed so much. The clips that they used were designed to create something that didn't actually happen. I mean, it's so sick. You know, I always say, you know, it was the first unarmed insurrection in the history of insurrections. I mean, it's never happened before, but arguably, I'd say probably the most heavily armed populace if they wanted to have been, right?
Of course.
But of course it wasn't an insurrection. It didn't matter. And
but,
they just wanted to run out the
clock.
But
you saw them, like, they could hardly believe this was happening. And I think you're describing the same thing. Like, you really believed it in our institutions and our norms and democracy.
I did. And it took, again, I mean, literally threats of, you know, you're going to jail for treason, a crime punishable by death. That's, like, not a great swing thought when you're going through it. You know what I mean? I'm like, wait a minute. Like,
if you're the father of five kids, that's
I'm
not.
Like, and yet I still, at the beginning of it, I was like, and then it just, your eyes start to open and you see the games and you see the people that are on your side and you see the, you know, the Lindsey Grahams of the world, right? They get on TV and they're on, you know, Fox or something like that. And they're like, well, we must subpoena these people and we must get to the bottom of this. I'm like, well, you're like the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Like, you have the authority to do that. But you're talking about doing the thing that you have the authority to do, but you're unwilling to actually exercise that power. So that was what disgusted me most about, like, the Republicans, right? You're telling your base, the people who are watching, you know, like, you're fighting, but you know damn well that you're not actually fighting.
No.
Right? And we see that so much. That's the
Such
difference
a betrayal.
Between. It's the difference between the Democrats. I mean, they've shown, hey, they'll put their opposition in jail. They'll smother them. They'll silence them. There's nothing they won't do to preserve power. We'll write a strongly worded memo and do nothing to follow up. And I think as long as you have that sort of imbalance in the response, nothing changes. Because, you know, the Democrats, they'll take their win. They'll run to the bank. They'll laugh their ass off along the way. And nothing changes until we actually start fighting back.
I think a lot of people yesterday when that verdict came down, I'm among them, my first reaction was, wow, they'll actually hurt us. Like, oh, they yeah. would execute us, me, I'll just say, yeah. speak for myself, and there would be an MSNBC panel of former federal prosecutors telling their yeah. audience that I deserved it, and they'd be laughing. And the Lincoln Project would send out a, you know, congratulatory yeah. tweet. And I was like, wow, there's sort of a lack of humanity. There's a coldness. There's an evil under all of this that I think I underestimate.
I think we all did. By the way, I think many still do. You know, again, it's hard to believe that you could live through these last 8 years or whatever, 10 years, and not think that. I mean, look at, you know, that this is even, you know, within 10 points in terms of an election. Like, I can't name literally a single metric, a single one, geopolitical, economic, or otherwise, like, where we're better off now. And yet, they'll outraise us, they'll do this, the media still pushes it as though, you know, Bidenomics is doing wonderfully for you. Like, I get it. I'm the son of a billionaire. Literally. If I'm pissed off at the grocery store, like, you know, I'm not like one of these woke guys on one of these channels where it's like, my three-month-old baby was talking about nuclear proliferation on the Karelian Peninsula, Tucker, and she was crying. She was scared. It's like, I get it. Like, I understand where I'm come from. I'm totally comfortable with that. I've been blessed. But, like, if I'm sitting there with sticker shock, like, what's the country feeling? You know, if I see what's going on in my interest rates or my mortgage, like, man, how much longer can we do this? Then you talk about wars and trillions of dollars of spending. And then the Republicans are telling us that, you know, the Ukraine is the number one most important issue for Republicans across our country. I've heard that from Mitch McConnell dozens of times. It's just not, right? I've spoken in front of more Republicans in the last year than Mitch McConnell has in his entire lifetime. And I think I've surveyed, probably I do it live, like just at a speech, you know, 1,000 people here, 500 people here, 5,000 people there. It's been a top 10 issue in about 60, 65,000 people for three people. One of them was a DC sort of beltway guy. Yeah. He felt very strongly about it. Probably he was profiteering off of it. One of them misunderstood the question, so he thought it was a double negative. So it was not, in fact, a top 10 issue for him. Because is it top three or top 10? And one of them, it was top 10, but not top three. And I said, sir, you know, and I'll ask him. I don't care. You know, I want to hear it out. Like, why is, well, I'm from Kyiv, Ukraine. I was like, I'm going to give you a pass. So I'm going to effectively say, out of about 65,000 people surveyed in the last, you know, let's call it 2 years, 18 months, whatever it is since the war started, a little more, I guess, exactly, you know, basically zero people have been in favor of this. But the leader of the Senate will tell us it's the number one issue for Republicans across the country. It's just not so.
How can that be? I was in D.C. last night. I never go back. I'm from there. Mm-hmm. And I took three people to dinner, four people at the table. Nobody drank. For yeah. all three, I am a teetotaler, so are the other three. Yeah. And it's a good restaurant, but not like a famous restaurant. Yeah. Restaurant I've eaten at for many years. The bill was $800 for four. $800.
Not
for
drinking.
Not drinking and nothing crazy. Yeah. Like salad, steak, dessert, $800. Right. And I thought, you know, I'm pretty insulated from cost, but I thought, I can't, how do people live here?
My experience was opposite of that. I took two of my boys on a fishing trip and we were coming back, traveling through an airport, and we went to a McDonald's, and it was my 11-year-old boy, my 14-year-old boy, and me at the time, and it was like $47 and change for like an 11-year-old child, a 14-year-old child, and me. I'm like, right. Again, it's not going to change my spending habits. I'm not pretending. I drive it. My truck has, you know, 700 horsepower. Like, you know, I'm not happy at the pump, but like.
But if they're telling you the war against Russia is the most important thing to Americans.
Yeah, no, it's not.
They're lying. So both of us have sort of skipped ahead past an analysis of the case and sort of taking it as a given that what we saw yesterday was grotesque and really sort of the end of a fair justice system. But for people who've just heard that and not gotten some of the details that prove it mm-hmm. to be true.
Yeah.
Can you just run through what the case was?
I mean, it's literally...
You know too much, I know. But to the extent you can...
How much time we got? But the reality, it's a books and records thing, right? I mean, it's literally a filing. It's like a misfiling. And yet it's something that was never before tried as a felony. Like many of the other cases, like one of the cases in New York where they changed New York state law to be able to, for 1 year... They changed the law for 1 year to be able to go back and change a statute of limitations so that you could go after my father. And then after that year, after that is filed and they go after my father, that was the Jean Carroll case. It reverts back to the normal statute of limitations because otherwise they wouldn't have been able to do it. This was very similar. This was a case that was, you know, at best misdemeanor type stuff. Remember, Hillary Clinton started with a similar thing. She got fined $8,000, I believe it was, for starting what was the Russia hoax with the steel dossier leaks and all of this, right? That was an $8,000 fine. They want to put my father in jail for, you know, upwards of 100 years, depending on how you look at it. And that's never been done before in these things because basically someone in an accounting department put legal expenses for, you know, paying a lawyer. It's unheard of. But you have experts when they say, well, it's a federal election crime. They wouldn't let the person who wrote the rules, like wrote them, is the foremost expert in all of that, actually testify for us. The jury didn't have to be unanimous on the things that they charged. They just all had to sort of come to a general, okay, four guys agreed on this and four people agreed on that and four, that's unanimous. The bastardization of all of this thing, and just having been in the courtroom candidly, was watching, you know, when the prosecution, you know, objected to something that we said, it was always, you know, sustained. They let them, you know, just, we couldn't ask anything. When it was us asking the questions, the uncomfortable questions of their witnesses, all of a sudden, you know, we were overruled every time. You just the list goes on.
So you've
and
made
on
the case,
and
others who followed it carefully have made the case that this was a direct hit from the Biden administration, and
100%.
They point to a man called Matthew Colangelo.
Yeah,
can you tell us who he is?
Yeah, Matthew Colangelo was the number three guy in Joe Biden's Justice Department. So from Washington D.C. The other big part of this case, you know, as it relates to that, was that they're trying to say it's a federal election commission case. Well, name another case that's ever been tried that's a federal crime tried in a state court.
So Matthew Colangelo is number three at DOJ. So that's about as high as a prosecutor can ascend. Right?
Correct. And he was moved to New York. Don't forget, Alvin Bragg, the district attorney that actually tried this case, turned it down years ago. They could have done this 7-8 years ago, whenever it happened, but they didn't. The Federal Election Commission, the FEC, that would have, you know, would have been one of the things that's around it. They could have tried. The IRS could have done these things because if it was a tax thing. All of them chose to pass, including, again, Alvin Bragg, the guy who's trying it and just tried it right now, passed on this a couple years ago. Biden's number three at his DOJ comes up, and all of a sudden now they're filing the charges.
Can I ask you,
right before an election.
A dumb question. So the number three guy at DOJ who's ascended this ladder,
yes.
Okay, what is he doing in New York? I mean, that's a massive step
down. What is
he doing?
He's prosecuting his political enemies, Tucker.
Okay, but that's it. But nobody...
There's literally no other explanation for it. When you look at the bastardization of this, you have a judge who's a Biden donor. His daughter is one of the number one Democrat
fundraisers.
When you say
he's a Biden donor, he's literally a Biden donor.
He's a Biden donor. Like, literally has written checks himself. His daughter is one of the most prolific fundraisers for the radical Democrats, Adam Schiff and like. She's made millions off of that. This judge allowed his daughter's clients, Democrat mega donors, to sit in the courtroom. It's like having front row seats, like you own the New York Rangers, right? It's think of how insane that is, right?
But can I ask a question? A dumb question? First of all, why would the number three guy at DOJ wind up in a case, in a state case? That seems like he must have been sent.
Of course.
One. Two, if the judge was literally a Biden donor and donating to, among other things, like the Stop Trump effort, which I think was one of them, how could he remain the judge? How could he?
Because it's New York. What do you appeal it to? You appeal it to another panel of radicals, right? I mean, it was like the New York AG case, right? We got fined almost $500 million for paying back a bank on time with interest. The bank, who's the alleged victim, is on the stand being like, no, we love Trump. We want to do more business with Trump, not less. Having their portfolio was a feather in our cap that we used to generate other business. Doesn't matter. You're a victim. It's pure and simple political prosecution. You know, persecution. They're going after. There's nothing that they won't do to stop Trump. And they understand now, with years of experience in the White House, I think, you know, going in as a novice was great in many ways. But you also don't know who the snakes are. You don't know who the people who are going to actually help you and be sort of loyal to the cause. And that cause is, you know, being the duly elected president of the United States, doing the things you said you would do, versus doing what the swamp wants. Slow rolling what the president wants, you know, all those unelected officials. And so I think the notion of Trump coming back now actually scares them so much more because he has that knowledge. He has that understanding. And I think that will make him so much more effective in a second term.
Well, and also, if you're going to kill the king, you better kill the king.
Yeah, you best not miss, as the saying goes.
That's exactly right. So are you worried? Well, a couple questions.
No.
Will this stop the campaign? Like, what effect is this going to have?
Listen, I spoke to my father, you know, right after the verdict, you know, today. I mean, you know, obviously, it's a somber moment. I mean, and, you know, you know me well enough. I can pretty much, you know, fight through anything and we keep going, and he will too. But, you know, it is a somber moment, more so for our country. So, but if anything, I would say it's actually strengthened his resolve. I think in 16, it was the elevator ride, right, before the infamous escalator ride. You know, now we find out who our real friends are. You know, he knew what was going to happen. He knew the celebrities would go. But he knew that, and he did it anyway. I think after 2020, he understood that if he just went home, he could go play golf and go back to building buildings and making millions and getting paid to give speeches and stuff like that. There's just too much at stake. And so he's just unwilling to stop.
I got to think a lot of people are looking back to 4 years ago and reaching the conclusion, well, if they'll rig a trial, they'll probably rig an election.
I think without question. I think, you know, the reality is, you know, what I see, you know, on the ground, the amount of people from the demographics that probably have never voted Republican before that are just, you know, grabbing me at airports or like even walking down the streets, you know, in New York the other day, it's amazing. I mean, I did a, for example, you know, I was one of the probably most out there people in terms of rallies and campaigns doing my own thing in 16 and 20. I think, just for example, October of 2020, I think I did 104 rallies in that month. So like four a day for a month straight, like I'm on the ground. You know, the energy in 2020 was better than even 16, amazingly enough, but they had that ability to weaponize COVID and all of that stuff. We saw the nonsense. It's so much stronger right now, and we're still 6 months out. That doesn't mean they won't do, you know, again, I don't even pretend to think that, hey, it's going to be fair, and they're not going to cheat, and they're not. I used to probably think that, hey, there's only so far they can go. Like, how you know, they're going to roll this guy over the line in a gurney and, you know, pretend he's, because I used to think they actually had maybe a little bit of shame, but that's not actually at all true. I don't think they care anymore. They're laughing at, you know, when they use democracy, it's a soundbite.
But they're never
punished.
About
at their cocktail
they're never
parties.
Punished. They weren't punished for the Iraq War. Correct. Or the Afghanistan withdrawal or the lies around COVID, the vaccine mandates. They weren't punished for the 2020 election.
Well, Russia,
the
Russia, Russia. I mean, Russia not bullshit. Only are they not punished, Tucker, they're given better jobs. They either keep their job and then they get a CNN contributorship to talk about preserving democracy.
But it's, maybe, I mean, if you treated your kids this way, they'd be sociopaths.
I
if
think,
you
allowed I think
them,
they are.
Yeah, well, they certainly
I mean,
are.
They are.
I'm sure they had boomer parents who indulged them, of course. But, I mean, someone needs to be punished at some point, right? So it stops?
I think without question. I don't think, you know, we have not done that well, Republicans, right? The Democrats don't fear us because they know we'd never play the same game because we actually believe. What they think is, like, you know, ha, 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 a soundbite. We actually believe those things. And it's actually hard. It's hard for me to say those things because I'd love not to have to play that game. But I don't believe there's another answer other than, like, we have to fight fire with fire. As long as we're playing T-ball while they're playing fast pitch hardball, they're going to win. They're going to take their power. They're going to run to the bank. They're going to and laugh every step of the way. There's just not enough actual fighters there. I mean, when you look at even honestly, look at the Republican bench. It's not very deep.
No.
You know, in terms of the guys that you'd actually be, hey, who's a guy I want in a foxhole? Who's a guy that'll actually fight? Who's a guy that's not going to succumb to the pressures of Washington, D.C.?
Who are they?
I mean, I love a guy like a J.D. Vance.
You know,
there are a couple, but man, that list is who's next?
Mike Lee is kind of becoming
Mike
that
Lee,
guy.
Mike Lee's a fighter. I like Mike, and you know, and it's interesting. It's one of those, you know, in 2016, Mike Lee and I almost got in a fist fight on the convention floor. Like, you know, we were very different, but like, he's a guy that I text with probably daily.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that, you know, once you actually have that relationship, you can actually, people come around. It's like, okay, you were actually right.
Well, people change on the basis of evidence and what they
Correct.
See. My views are totally different from what they were 10 years ago.
I think the problem with DC is for conservatives, it's actually an easy existence. You can be a Republican in DC as long as you're Republican light.
Of course.
You know, if you're like, hey, say whatever you want when you're speaking to a group of 10 people in your little hometown, you know, you can come to DC, you can vote with the Republicans like 80% of the time.
Yeah.
When it actually matters, as long as you vote with us, the Washington Post isn't going to come after you. They're not going to be protesting in front of your home. It's an easy existence. You'll get invited to the cool person Christmas party and, you know, holiday party. I don't want to, you know, they don't celebrate Christmas because, because they don't believe in God, right? Democrats, their gods are evolving, right? Because, you know, Greta Thunberg is the high priestess of climate change. Fauci is the, you know, the lord of
science.
Science and COVID. And these days it's Vladimir Zelensky, the high priest of Ukraine, which is apparently the number one issue for Republicans across the country. But I've not yet seen that anywhere. It's but those are the people they choose to be their deities. And, you know, and everything follows that path until they burn out, flame out, or, you know, get exposed for what they really are.
How can you run a presidential campaign when you're fighting multiple legal battles, criminal battles?
Well, I mean, that's by design, right? I mean, you look at all of these things. They understand, listen, Joe Biden in a basement is good for Joe Biden's campaign. Because if you put him on a stage, it's a negative, right? He's incapable of getting through a teleprompter. He would get lost at this table.
Yes.
I don't say that as, like, glibly. It's just,
no,
it's sad. I feel bad. He can't get through basic things, and yet he's the leader of the free world, or whoever's pulling the marionette strings. Trump locked in a courtroom for 5 weeks while he should be campaigning. That's really good for them, because he can bring that message to people. People, understand what he's saying. It resonates with them. He's able to bring people over who would not have otherwise been able to, or would have ever voted Republican. He's one of the few guys that can do that, sort of expose the left for what it is, expose what we're talking about, break through the noise put out there by, the mainstream media, break through the noise and sort of the manipulation of big tech. Those are trillion-dollar industries that are functioning as the marketing department for today's Democrat Party. And, to be able to single-handedly sort of break some of those walls down, if I was in charge of that, if I was in charge of the Democrat side, we'd be winning elections 99.9 to 0.01,
Exactly.
And yet they're still close. I think our messaging is there, and I think it's really important. Perhaps, honestly, the stuff that they've done to my father, our family, perhaps it's the most important thing to happen to America in recent history, in that it's exposed just how bad it is.
I think you can't hide
from it anymore. It's not like, I get it. Like, you come home from a long day of work, you're trying to feed your family, you're listening to 5 minutes of, Brian Stelter on TV. It's like, well, there's got to be something to it. During the early campaign stuff, if I watch TV to hear about myself, I'm like, man, I hate me too. Yeah. It's so bad. People feel it every day. They're not going for it anymore. And I think it's why they're, watching you here or me on Rumble or whatever it may be. They're going to other places to hear an alternate viewpoint because, the machine just isn't delivering anymore. And it's so unreal.
But the machine knows that, and the machine exists to perpetuate itself. That's the only point, is to maintain power. Mm-hmm. These are incompetent people with no other prospects in life other than running the machine. So,
Not all of them are incompetent. When I see what tech
is doing,
they're
good at machine running. Yeah.
When I see what tech is doing, though, you even see it now, because I see, the algorithm. It's like, it'll show me just enough of what I want to see, but never promote anything else. Right. And my Meta platforms, I haven't grown in 3 years, and yet everyone that comes up to me, hey, you got the greatest Instagram I've ever seen. So the people who are already following me will see my stuff. So it appears, it's almost like it's AI designed to let you think you're not being censored, or that you're able to see the stuff that you want.
Oh, I'm aware.
But they're preventing that growth. You're well aware of that. So,
yes.
The evolution of that is making it harder. In 16, 17, 18, when I was starting to get censored by, let's call it Twitter 1.0, they're like, well, how do you know you're being censored? I was like, well, because yesterday I got 7,500 retweets on a post. Today I got 3. And it's, I do my own social. When I hit that button, I know what it's going to do. I know when it's, okay, that's a decent post. That's hot. That's going to go big. And it's like when it goes big for about 30 seconds, and then it's like, you see exactly what they're doing, but they're coming up with better ways to make it appear as though they're not censoring, while still continuing to perpetuate and push the ideals that they espouse and value.
No one interfered in the last election more than Mark Zuckerberg,
or Google,
or Sergey Brin. That's exactly right. So, but let me ask you, the convictions come down, 34 yesterday, and your father goes out there and just basically raises the middle finger and says, we're going to win anyway. And within hours, Benny Thompson of Mississippi, who's a monster, Democratic congressman, says, introduces legislation to pull a Secret Service.
Yeah.
So basically they're saying, okay, we'll kill you now.
Well, they did that a while ago also. If he goes to prison, we want to pull his Secret Service. So basically, if we put him in a cell, we're going to put him in a place where he could be murdered.
But that's
by
a death threat.
Of course it is. But
from a member of Congress.
Again, should it surprise us? I mean, you look at half the congressmen, get in their faces, make them feel it. I mean, they can say these things and they are lauded as heroes. If we said something even remotely like that, we're literally inciting violence. I mean, those words are violence, Tucker. We've seen this. The double standard that's out there. I mean,
but how hard is it for you,
congresswoman after congresswoman? You have a Hamas caucus, in Congress calling for, the death of people in the Middle East. It's, well, that's okay. You can't do that. If we did something similar, we'd be blocked. We'd be off of every platform. We'd be canceled. And, again, different games. We're playing two very, very different games.
But that's so threatening. We're gonna. I mean, Tony Fauci has. He doesn't even work for the government. He's got Secret Service protection. He walks in the dog park.
Yeah.
In Washington D.C., I happen to know for a fact because it's my dog park, former dog park, and he's got three guys following him, but they want to pull it from your dad.
Yeah. Well, look at what they did with some of the justices, the Supreme Court justices, right? I mean, you think that they'd be able to do what they've done to even, Alito, even this week, we're going to make him recuse himself because his wife hung a flag upside down. It's like, well, she can't express an opinion. What they've tried to do to Clarence Thomas, what they did as it relates to Gorsuch and others, it's insanity. If they did that to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, if they were picketing in front of their house like they did Amy Coney Barrett, that would be a serious problem. Those people would go to jail.
Of course.
But, we'll let the, if that's the conservative justice, we'll let them suffer a little bit. We'll make sure it, but it's effective. Because then you see some of them, and some of them are a little weaker than, perhaps their principles. And, it's a little bit, maybe I got to go a little light on this one because it's not worth the headache. I mean,
when the Democratic Party's militia shows up outside your house, it's happened to me.
Yeah.
People are intimidated by that.
Of course. And we see it, across the board. It's designed, the Hunter Biden laptop, that's Russian disinformation. Here's 52 intelligence officers signing off on it. Oh, it must be. 4 years later, oh, no, it's actually his laptop. There's no accountability for that either, but... they're like, well, no, we're admitting it now. It's like, no, but you got exactly what you wanted at the time. We understand there's no accountability for it. That's election interference as much as anything else also. There was the stat, I think it was 17% of people said, had they known about the Hunter Biden laptop, it would have changed their vote in 2020. I mean, 17%? that's a lot of votes. And yet... that was the gospel. And if you said anything about it, we've had the conversation about, Wuhan lab leak theory. No. Of course it didn't come from the lab that studies the virus in question that we fund. It came from the wet market 3 feet outside of the lab. And if you believe otherwise, we're going to pull your funding. If you're a doctor, you'll lose, you'll lose tenure. If you're at a university, you won't, Fauci's going to not sign off on your grants anymore. And even if you were like, but you don't have to be a scientist. You're like, Don, how would you know? You're not a virologist. It's like, you don't have to be a virologist to know that it happened there. You just have to not be an imbecile. You can have mid, double digit IQ and be like, of course it came from the place that studies the exact virus in question that was at ground zero of where it released and not from 4 feet outside of that. It's insane. And yet think of the truly intelligent people in positions of power in medicine and otherwise who went along with this blindly. Because, it was easier to do and, there was a lot of money and, we're just not going to pass up on those things.
Kind of hard to do that now, though. I mean, everything that's happened.
This isn't all that long ago. I mean.
Right. But at this point, I do think at this point, if you're still telling yourself those lies, you are lying to yourself. You're a liar.
But it doesn't matter. They correct it years later, but they got what they needed out of the ruse.
Right.
Right. They got what they needed. And again, because there's no accountability after the fact, it doesn't matter. They'll do it again. And they'll make it the gospel for 6 months or, they always said, the difference between the truth and the conspiracy theory is 6 months.
Yeah.
Now it's 6 minutes, but they'll still get what they want out of that 6 minutes, use it to manipulate whatever they need to. And, I don't see that stopping. I see more people being awake to it, right? That 6 months moved to 6 minutes because people are not just blindly buying the BS anymore.
So how does it play out from here over the next 5 months? I mean, they tried to put him in prison. They're still. Do you think he? So
we got to overwhelm the margin of fraud.
So it's It's just to ask. It's July 11th. The sentencing.
July 11th. So by the way, you think that's a coincidence? That's 4 days before the Republican National Convention. Do you think that's a coincidental timing, or do you think that's designed to throw a wrench into that? I mean, yet another coincidence, right?
But what happens if they can they remand him and put him in jail then?
I imagine they will try, right? I mean,
why wouldn't they?
Yeah, of course. Does anyone think? And again, I
know that's too far.
That's too far. It's nothing's too far. And again, until it happens, everyone, we have to stop giving them the benefit of the doubt, thinking they're going to act above board. This is an arm's length transaction. No, it's not. What are you talking about? There's not a single aspect of this case that should stand in any court. But where do you appeal right now? To the New York Appellate Division, which is just as radical? And it's not just this case. Look at all the shade, all the craziness around Fannie Willis, right? That case. You look at Jack Smith and the FBI doctoring documents and setting up staging photos and then leaking it to the Washington Post, the classified documents that end up on the front page of the Washington Post. That's fine. Each one of these things wouldn't stand. If we did this to, conservatives, some sort of Republican did this to Obama, it would never end. It would be a perpetual story, and rightfully so. And yet, as long as it's against a conservative, as long as it's against Trump, who's up against that machine, we're going to allow these things to happen. Not, it's not like one of these things doesn't have any serious hair on it, right? They're all shady as hell, and yet it doesn't matter. And our mainstream media almost refuses to cover it. They won't talk about these things. You know, my father, in many cases, is gagged. I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, First Amendment is kind of the First Amendment, right? It's a big one for us. The president, former president of the United States, is not allowed to talk about the facts of the case because, you know, if people actually heard that from him, they'd realize just how much, you know, BS is in all of these things. That should trouble a lot of people. You think it stops with Trump? Like, I mean, think about that. I mean, if they can do it to arguably one of the most, you know, out there, most powerful people in the world, a bank account to be able to fight, you know, a base to push it, you know, venues to be a soapbox to speak from. If they can do it to him, who can't they do it to? But more importantly, if they will so flagrantly and so corruptly do it to him, who won't they do it to? That's exactly, that's the question we have to be asking. I mean, is anyone safe? And it's like COVID. You know, people going blindly along. No, it's going to be different this time. I'm like, really? Like that's what you've got out of this?
But last if they 8 years? Put the Republican candidate who was leading in the polls, all things equal, he becomes president again in November. If they put him in jail right before the Republican convention on fake charges stemming from a rigged trial, they're kind of pushing violence, aren't they?
Listen.
How do they expect people to respond to that? Nothing like that has ever happened.
In the reality,
history.
You have to be careful even how you talk about that.
No,
right?
They are pushing violence.
Well, they clearly are. But, you know, again, like nothing should surprise us, right? The star witness of this case is someone who lied before every branch of Congress, was disbarred, you know, lied to banks, lied to wives, lied to the press. But we're expected to believe that he actually told the truth in this one instance, right? That's who they hang their hat on because it doesn't matter. When it's rigged the way it is, it doesn't matter.
We're moving toward something ugly, and I don't want that.
No one does. But you know, they're not going to let it play out. I mean, do you think they'll ever take their foot off the gas? Like, no, it's not. They've gotten away with it for years.
How should people respond? Do you think?
I think honestly, the reality is everyone has to get involved.
Yeah.
And again, it's both sides. I mean, you have to have, you know, people, you know, running for office. And I'm not talking about president or Congress or, like, you know, run for your school boards. I mean, you know, that's perhaps the thing that's most important to me. Like, frankly, there's a component of me that I don't want to win the presidency if we don't have Congress and the Senate, because I'll probably be up on charges again. And we'll get to go through impeachment, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, for the next 4 years. And, you know, I don't think that's a great place to be. But I think, you know, apathy has caused us a lot of problems, especially on the conservative side. Where, hey, we run businesses and we do these sorts of things, and you know, we want to spend time with our families. And all noble things and important, but we have to take the initiative to get involved at every level of these things, because the left has taken over every major institution in our country that controls. I mean, what they've done in education, manipulating our children. What they've done in entertainment, oftentimes the same thing. It can't stand if we actually want to have a future. You know, our kids, they graduate, there's high schools with higher districts, you know, no one can read or do math, but, you know, they know the 4,376 genders. And I imagine since this interview started, there's probably another 15 that I haven't included that, so I don't want to be labeled as, you know, whatever, you know, a gender bigot by not including them, but that's the last I've been able to keep track of. We just live in perilous times.
It does seem kind of heartening. I think he raised more money in the hours after the verdict than anyone's ever raised. How much did he raise?
It's over, I think, $38 million that, you know, in the first couple hours. Small dollar donors, and then there was a bunch of big dollar donor stuff. That's what's interesting. I mean, there are tech VC guys, respected guys, that, you know, Hillary donors and even probably Biden donors that are like, okay, I've seen enough. You know, stroking, you know, 6 and 7 figure checks now, because you know, I think people who are watching closely enough truly understand just how far we have fallen, just how close we are perhaps to that, you know, fulcrum point where there's a point of no return, right?
Yes.
And I think if we ever let it get there, you know, there's no question in my mind that the Democrat elite, they'd maintain and seize that power, and, you know, it'll happen like all sort of, you know, communist nations. And that's where we're at. And I think people see that. And people who may not even agree with Trump on everything. And you don't have to agree with Trump on anything. I obviously agree with him on everything, Tucker. as the dutiful son. But, you know,
it's reached a level of principle, though.
Yeah, but it's like, again, you know, name a metric where we're better off under Joe Biden. You know, we're on the brink of, you know, World War III with the world's largest nuclear superpower by volume of nuclear capable, you know, ballistic missiles. Like, I don't know. We're going to keep funding that. We're okaying, you know, a guy that was a former like weirdo actor to send the U.S. made missiles into Russia, provoking that, I guess. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's the next distraction, right? You know, COVID was the distraction for 2020 to allow them to manipulate things. Maybe World War III is the distraction, you know, for this election.
Some
cycle.
Of us called this a year ago.
Yeah,
the senile man can't win. They're going to bring us to war. Yeah,
I mean, honestly, like, I don't say that lightly, but I also don't say it, like, I don't know. Like, would I be at all surprised? Not even, I think it's lunacy. I think it's crazy, but do I think they would do it? 100%. 100%.
Do you think since you, last question, but it's just, and I might be skipping ahead, but I don't think we're far from, well, we're at war with Russia.
Oh, of course.
If we're targeting
that whistleblower talking right. about the boots on the ground, I mean, that, like, I've never seen a whistleblower disappear that fast in my life.
Yeah, you wonder why.
I wonder why, huh? It's almost like it's happening.
But they would need, you know, the military's in very tough shape, and recruitment is way down. No one wants to join the training military, understandably. Yeah. Now they're talking about, well, who would, right?
Well, why would you, who's gonna, the guys you'd want fighting a war for you, you know, good, patriotic, red-blooded Americans. They don't want to go report to your trans admiral, not because the trans admiral was Patton, maybe they'd do it.
Yeah.
The trans admiral ain't Patton.
No.
Okay. The trans admiral is only an admiral because they're trans, not because they're competent or capable, and it doesn't matter.
It's grotesque. But
a big part of, you know, signing up for that and possibly dying for your country is actually believing in the things that you're fighting for. That's
exactly.
The basics of patriotism.
That's exactly.
And if
right.
you don't believe in those things and you understand that you're going to be vilified, you know, you're going to be forced to not learn how to shoot, but do diversity training. Why on earth would you do that?
And that's the problem they're facing. And so, you know, the one solution was take illegal aliens and put them in the military so we could have
or flood our borders and, you know, put them in the voting roster. And
exactly.
That's another way to make up power because you've lost other demographics that were reliable voters.
But they're also talking about the draft. You're hearing that all of a sudden. Well, maybe we need a draft.
Yeah. So we can be in never-ending wars. You know, again, no one's articulated to me, and I kind of do this now, feels like, for a living. Like, no one's articulated, what does victory in Ukraine look like? I don't know what it means. Like,
I don't
is
know.
It just, like, perpetual death of Ukrainians and Russians until they're all wiped out and, you know, BlackRock comes in there and takes over all the farmland? I mean, is that what it is? Because it, I mean, feels like that's what it is to me.
They're already selling off land in Ukraine to foreign investors, and they will flood Ukraine with third world immigrants, and Ukraine will not exist in 50 years. There'll be no Ukrainian nation, and we betrayed them like no other country ever. But I just ask, would people actually serve in a draft?
I'd have a hard time. I mean, honestly, the metric I use for this is not just the recruitment numbers, but the amount of guys that I know, you know, I shoot a lot and whatever, the circles are tight, like that are like fourth generation army. They're like, I would beat the crap out of my son if he decided to, like, these are guys that, you know, their entire ethos is around that military background. They are great friends. And they're like,
I know.
They wouldn't even think about it. They'd disown their children if they joined this military today. And that's sad.
It's the worst thing I can
imagine.
That's scary. Well, Godspeed. Thank you for that.
Thank you, man.